Isn't it weird? Isn't it weird? We were just talking.
Knock, knock.
Beasley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Moe, and this is the Paisley Penny Arcade. And if you've never been here before, welcome. And if you've been here before, welcome, welcome. Come on in, have a seat. There are beanbag chairs everywhere. There are big fluffy puffy chairs everywhere. There are leather recliners everywhere. They're pleather. Please don't get bent out of shape there. There are all sorts of, or do get bent out of shape if that's what suits you. Some people like being bent out of shape a little bit. There are chairs of every kind. There's all sorts of things going on here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. There's Paisleys everywhere. They're floating around. Grab one. Put it in your hand. Let it rotate a little bit. Look at it. Changes colors before your very eyes. That's the nature of the place. It changes as you sit. It's filled with grit and wit and a little bit of spunk, you know, energy, grit. Whatever. Grits. I like grits. Used to eat grits in the South. I'm not sure I've had grits since. My goodness, it's been a long time since I've had grits. You can buy it in the store, you know. I guess that's me talking to me. Hello. First of all, today is Wednesday, the 15th of January, 2025. And, wow. It's my kid brother's birthday. Happy birthday to my kid brother. He's a delightful human being, and I love him very much. He's a great guy. He is that. And to all my friends, and to all my listeners, and you're my friends, and I love you very much. And to all of you in California, please, sorry for what's going on. Be safe. And what a tragedy that's going on there with the wildfires. And man, are they wild. And this is not the first time California has gone through this. Unfortunately, I think we all know it won't be the last time. But what a devastating and terrible disaster. I mean, I know people there. And I know people who are in harm's way, and I know people who have gone through this fire. And all you can say is I'm just horrified by it, and I'm so sad and so very sorry. We had a fire here a couple of years ago called the Marshall Fire. It just wiped out an entire division in Louisville, Colorado, not far from Boulder. What a horrifying thing that was. So this is just something that has been happening, but it's been happening forever. I mean, the Chicago fire and the London fire and, you know, these things. Anytime, I mean, I don't even know what to say. Other than it breaks my heart, and I hope that that those of you who have been impacted by this, I do hope that you will recover. And I know that insurance companies have been preemptively dropping people from from their rosters. I mean, they've just been saying, nope, nope, no more, no more. It's happened here in Colorado because we get so much hail. I had, was on a Wednesday, as a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, we had hail damage. And right before I came on the air, we're talking about the hail that we got. And last year, I was 24, actually. I was 23, was the year of trying to get things fixed, and 24. And it was just, I think it happened in 23. And it was just, what a mess. What a really terrible mess it was. And, you know, this is what happens. And, of course, I won't get into all the nuts and bolts of how hard it was, but it was difficult. It wasn't easy in dealing with insurance and mortgage companies, and oh my goodness, it was not simple, not in the very least. And it's hard. It's really hard sometimes. And I just wish it was more simple than it is. So to all of you dealing with it, and dealing with what's coming for you in the future, first of all, just I wish you some peace of mind, and to get through it one day at a time. And you will get through it. I'm hoping that this is the case. Just get through it. All right? All right. This is the nature of being on a living planet. This is the nature of living next to nature, because a lot of folks live in beautiful places, but we as human beings live and we reclaim from nature gorgeous properties, just these lovely properties where we sidle up right next to where nature is, and that's just what we do. So, and nature is at times ferocious. Aleister Crowley said that nature is blind. The forces of nature are blind. And unfortunately, he was absolutely, positively right. That's something you learn when you deal with the types of things that I've been working with for a long time. You learn that no matter what you're dealing with, I'm snapping up my coat right now because in my office, it is chilly. And so if you'll bear with me here, I'm not naked or anything. I've got clothes on, but it's cold in here, you know. We have to sequester every room in the house with Coco Bean, our lovely puppy, because she will chew everything to pieces. And my office is filled with treasures. Like what, you say? Well, like this. What is that? That's my kazoo. And my nose flute is right over there. But my allergies are acting up, so one does not necessarily want to use a nose flute with allergies. It becomes a mucus flute. Sorry, did not mean to disgust you. My abacus. I have an abacus right here. Right here, right here. Also can double as a rhythm instrument. That's right. And, you know, I have my weather gadget, which doesn't make any noise, so it wouldn't do any good to pick it up and show it to you. I have all sorts of noise-making devices here, but they would on malas. I have lots and lots of malas, which she would just love to get a hold of and chew to tiny little pieces. So, and bells and an hourglass and just laying my eyes on things. And she would love to lay her teeth on them. She would, oh, and my Oscar Mayer weenie whistle, which I will not blow into my microphone, because that would be rude to you, and probably the FCC would not really enjoy that very much as well. That's right. Do you remember back, you don't remember this, but when I was a kid, there was a Cap'n Crunch put out a little whistle in their box, and you could blow that whistle into a telephone, and it would open a trunk line on your telephone, and you could make long-distance calls to anywhere in the world and not be charged. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And so there was a guy who discovered that. I certainly didn't. I didn't know about it till it was way too late. And they called him Captain Crunch because he was making free calls all over the world. He'd blow into that whistle, blow that whistle into his phone, and he'd have a trunk line to just about anywhere he wanted. And I think they eventually caught him and made a big deal out of it. It's like, come on, you guys can afford it. God, it was expensive back then. See, those of you youngsters who don't remember, why, it cost money to make a phone call. And you had to make phone calls, you had to make them on, let's see, weekends were cheaper, nights were cheaper. And boy, a collect call, woo-wee. You'd make collect calls and you'd code them. So I'd say to my parents, okay, I'm going to call and I'm going to ask for me. Do not accept. What I'm telling you is that I'm okay. So I'm going to call. It's going to be from Mo Abdelbaki. Do not accept. It just says, I made it, because I'd be hitchhiking. And I'd say, I made it, and I'm okay. I'm not lying in a ditch by the side of the road with my hands tied behind my back. Okay? So that's just what it means. Okay? So, you know, I'd get where I was going, and I'd get there for the, you know, hunker down for the night or whatever. I was going to do any more hiking, and I'd, you know, collect call from Mo Abdelbaki. Do you accept the charges? Yes, of course. We answer the... Mom, you're not supposed to answer. You're not supposed to accept it, you know. Momo, just call, you know, just... Man, it was rough. Oh, wow. And my mom and dad would call Egypt, you know. And, oh, God, that was terrible. Back in the 60s, early 60s, you'd have to try for 3 or 4 days to make a call like that. 3 or 4 days. It was just unbelievable. Because they'd try and go back and forth. And when I was 18, my parents and I, my family, my kid brothers and my baby sister, who was just a year old, who's now just this beautiful, gorgeous woman who was high-powered, working in the world. Amazing. She's pretty wonderful. So we went to Egypt, and we were staying at my aunt's house, and her husband was a general in the army. Big deal, you know. He was a great guy. My God, he was a wonderful human being. Oh, did I love him. And so there we were in this apartment. This apartment, by the way, was in Heliopolis, which means the city of the sun. And it was called that because it was called that by the Greeks in ancient times, because it was where it was believed that the sun rose. It was in the eastern part of Cairo, and it was believed that that was where Ra popped up. So very old, and this was made out of what I thought was black stone or something, you know, and I was looking at this building. It was just really dark stone, and I thought, what is this? And I scratched it to see if it was like granite of some sort, and I scratched it, and it was pretty, not soft, but you know. And it was limestone underneath. And I went, what is this? And my uncle, he said, this is made from the limestone that was taken from the outer casing of the Great Pyramid. And I just went, oh my God, how old is this building? He said, well, it's about 600 years old. I said, oh my God. And he said, yes, and they just every few, you know, whenever they need to, they replace the staircases. And these rooms had huge high ceilings, you know, like 15 feet tall, 15, 20 feet tall. So the rooms were just icy cold because we went in the winter. And there was no snow or anything, but it was cold at night. So in the daytime, it was all right, you know, more or less. But at night, wowie, did it get chilly. Because it was in the desert, you know, Giza was where my grandmother lived. But this was, it was just amazing. What a trip that was. What a trip that was. I'm not sure where I was. You see, that's what it's like. But anyway, so their phone didn't work. That's right. So their phone wasn't working. It would work intermittently. intermittently. So they wanted to make a call to some other people to let them know that we were in town. And it was like they pick up the phone and it would work and then it would cut out and work. And I said, yeah, what? There was a phone line. I said, well, where does this go? My uncle said, well, up on the roof. So I went up on the roof and here's this phone line and it's hooked to this thing, whatever, this, you know, and it's this screw. And the line is like almost unhooked. I mean, it's not screwed in properly. I took a dime out of my pocket and screwed it in with the dime, and it worked perfectly from then on. Because they'd called the phone company, and they told them it would like be 2 to 3 months to get someone out there. And I thought, wow, it's just the same as this country, you know? So, unbelievable stuff. I don't know, the world is just a fascinating place to be. And that was 52, 53 years ago. Unbelievable. I know, life is fascinating. Life is amazing. All you have to do is just kind of open up. Open up and fall back into it. It's like that thing where you, do you trust me? Do you trust me? You know, sometimes the world will catch you, and sometimes it just lets you fall flat on your back. Yeah, that's the way the world can be. Huh. Okay, what are you going to do? So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I've been thinking about spirituality a lot. A good friend of mine, when I was a kid, he was I've talked about him a lot. His name was Joe. And Joe and I were friends. And he was kind of a wild child, but not that he got into trouble. But it was hard not to notice Joe because he was a very different sort of kid. He stood out without trying to stand out. First of all, he was a brilliant kid, kind of a genius kid. He was inventive. He could create things. He could, for example, in the sixth grade, he invented a strobe light. And it's like, how did you figure this out? He said, well, it just came to me that this is how you do it. And you're thinking, well, why would... In the sixth grade, would Joe invent a strobe light, 66, 67, in that time, you know, sixth, seventh grade? Well, because it was that time of the in history when strobe lights were just kind of becoming popular. And so I went to his house. He invited me to this little party he had. And so we're all in Joe's bedroom and walking on the furniture. And I hadn't partaken of anything, but I think some of Joe's friends had, and yeah, we were young, but it was happening. It was one of those happening, and there's a strobe light he made out of an old turntable, his kiddie record player, and an old lamp, and it was genius how he did this. It was absolute genius. Some aluminum foil, and I tried to make one years later, and I just couldn't do it, but he had that mind. Soapbox Derby, he won several times. His ingenuity, he was into science, he was into this and into that, but, you know, he got mixed up in the wrong sort of avenue of the hippie movement and ended up eventually on the wrong side of things. I'll put it that way. I had an opportunity to join him in that and chose not to. I was too young. I made the decision that I was just too young. And I made the right decision because I was just too young. 13, 12, 13, 14 would have been much too young. I waited a few more years and I sought it out. And I had to knock on the door pretty hard before the door opened for me into that world, and I was quite ready for it. I'm glad I did. I've never had a moment of regret. I guess maybe at times I have because I jumped pretty hard. I really did. But I was ready for the counterculture, and in many ways it was quite ready for me as well. I was hippie material, let's say that. Maybe freak material is a better way to put it. But I was already into tarot. I was into tarot and not astrology. Astrology came later, but I was into seances and ghosts because I had seen a ghost and lived in a haunted house from the time I was 6 years old. That messes up your mind a little bit. I was ready for that. I was certainly right there. Seeing a ghost at the age of six will just warp you. Especially when, I was able to prove it to my dad. I was able to prove it. And I'm glad I could, because he knew I wasn't, totally Looney Tunes. But, kids in my school, they all knew I was strange at a very early age, what could I say? Actually, the whole time I was in school, from grade school on, kids always kind of, that kid's kind of different. Kid's kind of weird. He's Egyptian and he's weird. And I was like, well, yeah, that's just something about that being set aside. A friend of mine from junior high school recently, we've been kind of back in touch, and he said he thought of himself as a bumpkin. And I didn't think of myself as a bumpkin, but I did think of myself as weird. Now, think about that. Did you think of yourself? How did you think of yourself? Did you think of yourself as weird? Did you think of yourself as an outcast of some sort? I thought of myself as stupid. I did. Even though later on I would find out that that wasn't the case. But I thought of myself, because I didn't, school didn't excite me. There were some things that did excite me, and I got really good grades in, but most of the stuff, it just didn't. And I certainly wasn't a jock. And jocks were idolized in my schools. The kids who could play football, the kids who could play basketball, baseball. Funny, the kids who could play tennis were not idolized, But I was friends with a few of those tennis-playing kids. They were excellent tennis players, and they were friends of mine in high school, pretty good friends. But they weren't, like the football players were. I actually became pretty good friends with a few football players. And eventually they kind of became, you're not supposed to be friends with that guy. Although I became great friends with the football captain. But he couldn't tell anyone, It was like, I don't know if I can really advertise this. Stupid stuff. Really weird stuff that went on back then. So my friend, this friend I was telling you about before, he was a real hippie. Grew his hair long. The school tried to make him cut it. He threatened to get a lawyer. And I don't know if the ACLU was really around then, but it was more a chance of, you can't make me cut my hair, And he called their bluff. And so instead, what they did is, I don't know if they did that. That was our thought at the time. My mom was the one who made me cut my hair. So I wasn't able to cut my hair till I graduated from high school or get my hair long. And then I went kaboying, and I looked like a freak. That was a weird time. But he was being beat up by cowboys, is what we call cowboys. They were just kids, but they were rough and tumble. So he had to leave town and go to another school in another city in Denver. And he graduated completely in a different city. And then he went on a pretty rough road. And I don't know everything that happened to him, because we lost touch, and you lose touch with people. And years and years and years and years and years later, apparently he went on a very spiritual journey, but not before having gone through life, lots of life, and ending up the way many people do on the streets. And having a very difficult existence. And now he's a bishop in a major church and very spiritual. And I think he believes in it completely. And I thought about spirituality a lot. And what is spirituality? I think about spirituality. there are times when I see the people who fervently, truly believe. And they believe in things so much so. And I think, God, I wish I had that sort of belief. You know, it would be nice to have. I've never had that sort of Bible-thumping belief, and I don't understand where that comes from. I've always been a skeptic about a lot of things. I mean, when my mother was telling me stories, you know, when I was 5 years old, about Moses crossing the Red Sea and parting the waters and these miracles and all that stuff, I looked at her and said, Mom, those are fairy tales. Don't tell me you believe that. And she really got mad. And she said, What are you telling me? I said, I'm telling you that if you believe that stuff, really believe those stories, then you might as well believe the fairy tales that you tell me, you know. And she got very angry with me. And I mean really angry. And I couldn't figure out at that age what was the difference between the fairy tales that adults tell children and the religious stories that they told, because they seemed to me to be very much the same, you know? And yet, entire societies were built on these stories. And my dad, when he came home, because, trust me, it was a big deal, a very big deal, especially when I won't tell you all that went on. But my dad said, don't do that again. You know, just don't do that again. And I said, well, how come in one story it's a miracle and in the other story it's just a fairy tale? It's just, a story. And I said, you know, because here's the story of the three little pigs and pigs can talk. And in another story, you know, at Christmas Eve, the animals talked, and that's supposed to be true? That's a story, you maybe haven't heard that one. But and it was really hard for me at the age of 5 and 6 or whatever, that I had to separate those two, and I could not. And it seemed remarkably unhinged to me that this is how the world was. And and yet I knew that there was a ghost in that house because I saw the guy. Saw him. He was there. And later on, I saw the pictures of him in the garage, in the carriage house. And I heard other things happening that I was very unhappy about. So I knew that there was more. I knew that there was more, but I could also tell that there were things that people believed in that just seemed like, to quote our outgoing president, malarkey. It just didn't seem like there were, you know, the things that people believed. So my whole life, and I, for example, I know that tarot works, but I also, people talk about you can't let other people touch your cards. And I think, well, that's simply not true. I used to let people shuffle my tarot decks until they ruin them. They ruin the cards shuffling them. Because shuffling a deck of cards properly is not easy to do. It's not easy. Especially tarot decks, which are usually conventionally pretty big. They're longer than they are than a regular deck of cards. And so I would say, no, let me shuffle them and you can cut the cards. And then, you know, people get fancy with the cuts and they have to do all these things. It's like, oh, for goodness sake, you know. So, you know, do you want to know why, you know, people say, you must cut with the left hand. And do you know why that is, by the way? I'm going to tell you, it's not a superstitious thing. It's not a spiritual thing. It's because back in the old days, they would get you to cut with your left hand so that they could see, number one, were you married? And if you were married, how rich were you? Because by the ring, you could tell, you know, how you were doing. So there's a reason for everything. Back, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. So I think to myself, what is spirituality? Now, my buddy Joe is not only a bishop, But it's kind of it's a real church. He's in the Book of Apostles. He's in the Book of Apostles. My friend Joe, that I used to hang out with as a kid, you know, and I took his paper route for 2 weeks, and boy, were people mad. He's in the Book of Apostles, and that's as legitimate as you can get. Yeah, it's really something. I'm so proud of him, and I really love him. I mean, I love him. I completely do, because he's the real deal. There's a sweetness in him and a devoutness in him, and he's a true believer. And I really like that about him. My dad was a true believer, but he wasn't a true believer. Maybe he was. I don't know. See, that's the thing. I don't know. I miss that aspect of things. I don't know. And I believe in lots of stuff. Make no mistake. I believe in a lot of things, but I've also been around long enough to know a lot of things, too. There was a famous channel in this area, you know, and by channel, I don't mean body of water. I mean someone who channeled a famous entity. And I was, you know, I was doing a presentation. And the famous channel was there. And the famous channel, if you've ever been around a famous channel, you should know that if you're around the famous channel, no matter what you're doing, the famous channel is going to basically channel the famous channel. You know, that's just the way it is. The famous entity is going to come through, you know, bottom line, that's just the way it is. And so, and they asked the channel, would you please bring the entity in? And so, and I said, I don't mind. I absolutely don't mind at all. And I thought, well, I'm, you know, just going to. So I sat back, and suddenly here was the famous entity, you know, incredibly thick accent and all, and describing what the entity was wearing and doing in this incredible accent and all of this and that. And I essentially just had to point out that at the time there was the person was saying, I'm wearing this and that, and all I had to do was point out that at the time this person was saying they lived, that they didn't wear that clothing in that part of the world. And the channel turned and looked at me through slitted eyelids and whispered, don't blow it for me. Just like that. And really quietly, but very hissingly, and I said, okay. You know? And I thought, okay, there we go. Then I know that the famous channel is, you know, it may be a medium, but they're, you know, medium rare. I don't know. So I don't know. I've been doing this a long, long time. When I was in my 20s in Baton Rouge, there was a place called the Pyramid Shop, and I used to hang out there a lot, and they even, you know, paid me off in trinkets sometimes. They never paid me a penny, but I didn't want money. I just wanted to hang out, and I would help people, and it was a great place in actuality. It was wonderful. And there was a very famous psychic there, and she became a great friend of mine. Her name was Midge Soderberg, and her son was the famous Steven Soderberg, the director. And she knew that her son was going to win an Oscar and all that. But so this famous psychic surgeon from the Philippines came through, and he was doing this work on someone, and he's pulling stuff out, blood and guts and, you know, and pieces of string out of this person's abdomen, and it was disgusting, you know. It was just really gross, and I'm thinking, this is pretty slick. I'm enjoying watching this. And I caught him with a thumb tip, you know, magician's thumb tip, because I was at an angle, and he saw that I caught him, and he said, can I speak to you afterwards? I said, sure, you can speak to me afterwards. And he said, please don't reveal this, you know. And I said, I'm not going to tell anyone anything, except I'm telling you now. And I've told a lot of people. And he said, it's faith healing. And I said, okay. I kind of knew that anyway, because I can't imagine this person ate a piece of twine. And that looked a lot like a part of a gizzard that you pulled out of there. And he said, but it's very good work. It's very good work, you know. And you know, you could probably do it if you wanted to. I'll teach you. I said, no, there's no way I'm carrying around, you know, chicken guts on me. And so I thought to myself, what is this faith thing? What is spirituality? What is it really about? I mean, I've been doing readings. You know, first I did my first reading when I was a kid on the playground. There was this cute little girl, and boy, was she cute. And I kind of had a crush on her, you know, and I think I was 8 years old. And I said, I'll read your poem. And I got in trouble for that. I always assumed that it was because it was, you know, the thought was, oh, he's doing the old devil's work, you know, but it wasn't that at all. The teacher who grabbed me between her fingernails, she had these long, not long, they were, but they were, you know, long, they were longer than normal, not long, but they were, you know, sharp. And she caught me between the ear, you know, cut my ear with her thumb and first fingernail, and took me into the principal's office and sat down and said, he was reading her poem. And the principal did not like that. But he's a nice guy. He said, you know, you really shouldn't do that. Do you think you know how to do that? I said, well, yeah, I do. I was sure I did. And I said, I was going to look at her lifeline. He said, and what were you going to say? I was going to tell her she had a long, long life. I was going to look at her heartline and tell her that she was going to be in love with me because I had such a crush on her. She had red hair and freckles, and she was very cute, you know. God, I've always been such a romantic. And she was cute. Becky. Her name was Becky. And she had lost a tooth, and boy, did that make her even cuter. That was just the way it was. And I found out later that the teacher was not agin all that stuff, because I looked her up eventually, and actually I had her. It was in her school, but I didn't actually have her as a teacher. But she was in that school, and I got to know her relatively well, but I found out later that she was a spiritualist. So she was into seances, and she was into spiritual. I mean, so she was one of us. And so what she didn't want was a little kid messing around with it if they didn't know exactly what they were doing. And I think that is far out, you know. And she was into puppetry, you know. So she was into all sorts of cool stuff. Boy, did she sing. She had a loud soprano voice that would drown everyone else out. It was a hoot. But they named a school after her right near my house. So I always felt like she was ready to grab my ear, you know. That's a different story completely. And she never married. Never married. And that doesn't mean anything other than, you know, she was really, really cool. I mean, I thought, wow, I wish I'd known that. I might have later on, you know. And she was, she had to be pretty, she was started teaching in the 20s. So, but that's when I started. That was kind of what I was about. So the spiritualist movement of the 20s that included seances and included ghost hunting and included, you know, all that stuff. Is that spirituality? I mean, I don't know. I still, at times, really go through this in my head. Is there persistence of life? You would think that a guy like me has a definite answer. When my friend Jack died when I was 19, we were both 19, it ripped me up. Man, it just about tore my gizzard out. We loved each other. We were friends, man. We were buddies. And he was a sweet guy. He was a great guy. And he died. Boom. My world changed. The first good friend I had who who left. And I took my parents bought me a car, didn't ask me, do you want this car? No, but they bought it anyway because it was safer than the bucket of bolts I'd been driving. You know, a wooden box would have been safer than the bucket of bolts I was driving. And I took it to the graveyard. I'd been a pallbearer. It's funny, I've been a pallbearer so many times. I had the great honor of carrying my mother and my father. Anyway, so I took it and drove it to the graveyard and sat on that car and next to his grave, and I talked to him. Talked to him for about an hour and just told him how much I missed him, you know. Because I could tell Jack anything, and I mean anything. And talked to him, told him how much he meant to me. Jack and I had met in the sixth grade. He moved two doors down. And and that was that. Took off. That night, he came to me in my sleep, in the dream. He said, I can meet you halfway for a while. I said, really? He said, yeah, I can meet you halfway. He said, I said, do you go see your mom? He said, oh, no, she couldn't handle it. No, she can't handle it. He said, but I can come see you. I said, how is it? He said, oh, it's nice. It's not bad. It's not the same as being alive, but it's not bad. He said, I've got about 90 days or so that I can come and hang out with you and, you know, I can come see you. And I'm going to come see you. He said, it's really sweet of you to show me your car. He said, you didn't pick that out, did you? I said, no, I didn't. He said, I might have picked that out. I said, I know you might have. But we talked. He said, "It's you'll see it eventually, but we had a nice talk. I said, is this real? He said, yeah, it's real. You would think after that I would believe, wouldn't you? And he came to me several times, and talked to me and said, it's okay. I'm okay, Mo. You don't have to worry about me. I'm in great hands, and everything's going to be okay for me. And eventually he came back one last time and said, I've got to say goodbye. Now, interestingly enough, a few years ago he came back. And I don't remember exactly everything about it, but he came back. I was dying when I was in my 30s. I was 34 years old, and I was dying of double pneumonia. And I saw my dad. It was the night before I went in the hospital. And I was really, really sick. And at the end of the bed, there was a bright light and an escalator. Talk about trite. And when my dad came out from the bright light, he was wearing a double-breasted suit. My dad looked good in a double-breasted suit. And he said, do you want to come? I said, are you, Dad, is that you? He said, no, I'm not your father. But I knew you wouldn't be scared if I dressed like him, if I looked like him. He said, do you want to come? I said, no, I don't. I said, the world needs me. My kids were small. I said, my kids need me. And the world needs me. I'm supposed to do something. He said, the world will be fine without you. The world will be just fine without you. And your kids will be fine without you. They will manage. Don't worry. If you want to stay, you have to stay for you. And you have to fight. Because you're very, very sick. But if you want to come, just come, get out of bed, take my hand, we'll go. And I said, no, I do think I'm, because I wanted to go so badly. I was so sick. I had a quarter of a lung left. Doctor had misdiagnosed me. I'll give you his name if you're interested in a doctor. Kidding. And it took me 6 months to recover from that double pneumonia. I was pretty sick. And you'd think I would believe. You'd think I'd know for sure. You know, they gave me last rites the next day. I wasn't even a Catholic. They gave me last rites. I don't know. What is this doubt, you see? I've been doing tarot all my life, and it works so well. Astrology is so brilliant. It works so well. And yet, I don't know what this doubt is, you know? My dad was a scientist. He believed. He believed. I said once to him, I said, Dad, do you believe in God? And he turned to me and looked at me like I had just asked him, do I have six eyes on my cheek? You know, it was just like, what the hell is wrong with you, boy? And I said, why do you believe? He said, and he was a veterinary surgical anatomist. He said, if you understood the knee and the ankle of a horse, you would have to believe in God. And that was good. I said, okay. You know, I don't know. And I'm not trying to pass on. I'm not trying to say I don't believe. I'm just saying there are people who are fervently, like, okay, so, who are the people who never question? Who are the people who just blindly follow without ever questioning anything? Like the people who, let's say, someone says, I want you to vote for this person, and they just do it. They don't even say, really, should I vote for this guy? Even though he's done this, 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 and this, shouldn't I think for myself? See, if there is a God, then that God should be all-loving, all-caring, should believe in peace and love, and should have a sense of beauty, because this earth is so beautiful. It is so wonderful. Don't you think? I do think. I think that this is one of the most glorious things that there is. And yet, look at the rings of Saturn. How beautiful are they? Or look at some of the things that we're seeing with the Webb telescope. Oh my God. They're beyond belief in their beauty. There are some of them that I've looked at, some of these pillars, that the first thing I've seen in them are gods. I think to myself, oh my goodness, this looks like a god, like a Greek god or an ancient Egyptian god. It's like, wait a minute, what am I seeing? They look like forms, like shapes. I think, wow, these look like deities. Stunning. Unbelievable. You look at the spirit of a creature. You look at the spirit in a lion or in our dog who has this indomitable spirit. You know, she is strong and powerful, and she loves ferociously, you know. It's instinctive and it's intuitive. Yeah. It's an amazing thing, spirituality. This need to believe. I believe in a lot. Don't get me wrong. I'm certainly questioning all the time. All the time. After our dog died, Trudy, this June, I was crushed. I mean completely and totally crushed. And when we found Coco Bean, I was gooey. And I felt it just worked together so well that there had to be something, a bigger hand in it. So there are times when you just say, okay, maybe. But then you look at these fires in California and the tens of thousands of people who have been completely displaced, you know. And then you remember what Aleister Crowley said, and that is, nature is blind. And it does humble us all, and it puts us on the same level. And maybe that's the point, is to say, nature doesn't care if you're on the streets or if you're the world's richest human being. We're all the same. We're all the same. I've been struggling with this lately. Maybe it's because I'm getting older. But no, this is the same struggle I've had all my life. I mean, every time you crack a tarot deck open, you cut the deck and you pull a card, every single time, you're peering into the void. You're taking a chance with fate. It's a wonderful thing. Maybe, you know what? Maybe it should always stay a mystery for me. Maybe that's why I stick with it. Because I love that mystery. Because I love that feeling of not knowing. And I want it to be that way forever. Maybe if I felt that I knew, it would ruin it for me. Maybe that's why I've studied astronomy and astrology and tarot and everything else so diligently, because the one thing that I can't know until it's too late to report it back, maybe that's what it's about for me. I just need to accept that, I guess. Huh. Who knows? I do know there are ghosts. And that means that something persists. I do know that there are times when I get that best parking place there is at the grocery store and I feel my dad in it. You know? I know that my daughter feels my dad all the time. And she said that after he died, she came to him. And he read to her. She swears it up and down. She didn't know he was dead. She said, Grandpa came to me last night. She was young. And he read to me. I thought, what? And you know what? I didn't disbelieve her. There's got to be something. He came to me after a month of bad dreams after he died. And I mean bad dreams. And finally, in a dream, he kind of stopped it all, the cycle of grief. And he let me know he was okay. Something's got to be there. Why am I feeling this way? Well, I'm not going anywhere, I don't think, anyway. I think I just need to feel some hope. With the way the world has been going, with the sense of so many people facing so much turbulence, I do feel hope. If my friend Joe can go from being on the streets and being in such dire straits to being a bishop in a real church and having his heart so full and helping so many people, then the world has got to be a pretty good place. Don't you think? I think so. Well, I don't know if anyone's still listening or if anyone ever listened at all. But that's today, January 15th, 2025. For whatever reason, this is the way it took. With the fires going the way they have been, with everything going the way it is, it just felt kind of heavy, you know, but also light. There's always hope. There's so much going on. Just know this. I love you all so much. So much. I'm a part of you. I'm a part of this whole process. In some way, I feel like I'm a part of everything. Whatever. All right. Something's going on. All right. Well, until next week, I truly mean this. I wish you all peace, and I wish you all love. Drop me a line if you want, okay? Motarot, M-O-T-A-R-O-T, at comcast.net. I love to connect. Talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
To the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah. 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago, I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. To those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy a rock candy, because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but it's pretty good stuff. And in Montpelier, Vermont,